Hello, I'm Sebastian. Welcome to Nine Nartrees Podcast. Today, I will summarize and review the book. Musicophilia: Tales of Music and the Brain is a work of popular neuroscience by neurologist and writer Oliver Sacks. Published in 2007, it examines the relationship between music and the human brain through clinical case histories, personal observations, scientific findings, and reflections on musical experience. Rather than presenting a single theory of music, Sacks builds a wide-ranging portrait of how music can appear as pleasure, compulsion, disability, therapy, memory, hallucination, and identity. The book considers people with unusual musical capacities, neurological injuries, amnesia, Parkinson's disease, dementia, amusia, synesthesia, and musical hallucinations. Its purpose is to show that music is not merely entertainment or cultural ornament. It is deeply embedded in perception, movement, emotion, memory, and social life. Sacks writes for general readers, musicians, clinicians, and anyone interested in how brain function becomes visible through unusual human experience. I will give you key takeaways from this book. Firstly, music as a distributed brain function rather than a single faculty. A central idea in musicophilia is that music cannot be reduced to one isolated brain area. Sacks emphasizes that musical experience draws on many capacities at once, including pitch perception, rhythm, timbre, melodic contour, harmony, motor timing, memory, emotion, and attention. This matters because it helps explain why musical abilities can survive even when other abilities are severely damaged, and why music can also be disrupted in very specific ways. Someone may lose the ability to recognize melodies while preserving speech, or may retain the capacity to perform music despite profound impairment in ordinary memory. The book, therefore, treats music as a window into the organization of the nervous system. It shows that the brain is not divided into neat compartments for language, movement, feeling, and memory. Music crosses these boundaries and activates relationships among them. Sacks uses case histories to make this idea concrete, showing how neurological breakdown can reveal hidden structures of ordinary perception. The reader comes to see musicality not as a decorative talent possessed by a few, but as a complex human capacity distributed through much of mental life. Secondly, musical disorders reveal how perception can misfire. Sacks gives substantial attention to conditions in which music becomes distorted, intrusive, or inaccessible. Amusia. For example, can make organized music sound chaotic or unpleasant, showing that musical understanding depends on specialized perceptual abilities rather than simple hearing alone. Musical hallucinations demonstrate another kind of misfiring, in which the mind generates vivid music without an external source. Earworms, seizures involving music. Sudden musical obsessions, and cases of musicophobia broaden the same point the brain can produce music involuntarily. And this production can be distressing as well as fascinating. These cases prevent the book from becoming a simple celebration of music. Sacks is interested in music as a neurological force that can comfort, disturb, organize, or overwhelm. The importance of these disorders is that they make normal musical perception easier to understand. When melody, rhythm, emotional response, or recognition breaks apart, the separate components of musical experience become visible. The book uses pathology not to define people by deficits, but to show how intricate and fragile ordinary listening actually is. Thirdly, rhythm and melody can organize movement when voluntary control fails. One of the most practical dimensions of musicophilia is its discussion of music in relation to movement. Sacks describes how rhythm can help people with motor disorders initiate and sustain action, especially in conditions such as Parkinson's disease. A steady beat can provide an external structure that allows movement to become smoother, more continuous, or more coordinated than it is under ordinary voluntary control. This does not mean that music cures the underlying condition. Rather, it can temporarily recruit alternative pathways of timing, anticipation, and motor patterning. The reasoning is neurologically important movement is not only a matter of muscle command, but also of sequencing, rhythm, and embodied expectation. Music can supply a temporal framework that the impaired brain may use when internal regulation is unreliable. Sacks also connects music with walking, dancing, speech rhythms, and coordinated activity, showing that musical timing has practical consequences beyond listening. This topic gives the book a clinical relevance that distinguishes it from purely aesthetic writing about music. Fourthly, musical memory can persist when autobiographical memory collapses. Musicophilia is especially powerful when it explores the separation between musical memory and ordinary autobiographical memory. Sacks discusses cases in which people with severe amnesia or dementia cannot retain recent events, yet can sing, play, recognize, or emotionally respond to music. This suggests that musical memory is not identical with factual recall or narrative self-knowledge. It may depend on procedural memory, emotional memory, pattern recognition, and deeply encoded forms of learning. The implication is not that music restores lost memory in a simple way. Sachs is careful to show that music may reach a remaining part of the person without reconstructing the full lost past. Still, this remaining access can be profound. A familiar song can organize attention, awaken expression, and create a temporary sense of continuity. For caregivers and clinicians, this has practical importance because it shows why music may remain meaningful even when conversation fails. For readers, it raises a deeper question about identity. If music can survive where biography disappears, then the self is partly carried in patterns of feeling and action, not only in conscious recollection. Lastly, case histories create insight while limiting theoretical unity. The structure of musicophilia is built around case histories rather than a single linear argument. This is one of its strengths, and also one of its limitations. Sachs presents unusual patients, musicians, listeners, and correspondents in order to show the range of ways music enters neurological life. The method is humane and concrete. Instead of beginning with abstract models, he lets particular lives reveal the complexity of perception, memory, disability, and adaptation. This approach makes the book accessible to readers without specialized training and preserves the individuality of the people described. At the same time, the book does not offer a complete scientific theory of music. Its conclusions emerge cumulatively, through pattern and comparison, rather than through one unified framework. Some readers may find the episodic form fragmented, and the focus often leans toward classical music and clinical examples. Yet this form suits Sachs' larger purpose. He is less interested in reducing music to mechanism than in showing how mechanisms and meanings meet in real human lives. The result is exploratory neuroscience shaped by clinical attention. In conclusion, musicophilia is best suited to readers who want a thoughtful bridge between neuroscience, medicine, music, and human experience. It will appeal to musicians who want to understand why music feels cognitively and emotionally powerful, clinicians interested in music therapy and neurological rehabilitation, and general readers drawn to unusual case histories. Its practical benefit lies in showing that music can support movement, communication, mood, memory access, and social connection, especially where ordinary abilities are impaired. Its intellectual benefit is broader. It challenges the assumption that music is secondary to language or reason, presenting it instead as a fundamental mode through which the brain organizes time, feeling, and identity. Compared with many popular science books, musicophilia stands out because it does not reduce its subject to a simplified theory or a set of dramatic claims. Sachs combines clinical observation, scientific curiosity, and moral attentiveness to individual lives. The book is not a technical manual of music therapy and not a comprehensive neuroscience of music. Its distinctiveness lies in its case-based method, its refusal to separate brain mechanisms from lived experience, and its ability to make musical phenomena reveal larger truths about perception, memory, vulnerability, and personhood. If you would like to support Oliver Sachs, you can buy the book through the Amazon link I've provided in the podcast description. After reading the book, please let me know what you think and share your thoughts. See you around.